Hello, coaches, and welcome back to another great episode of our ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse, our podcast where we connect with some of the best baseball minds in the game today. On behalf of the American Baseball Coaches Association, let us take a quick moment and sincerely thank each and every one of you for listening in each week and supporting this project. We're excited to bring educational content to you in this fashion, and we can't thank you enough for listening in each and every week. Thank you again for your membership and support of the ABCA, and we're certain that with this episode, you're really going to enjoy it. It is certified audio gold. My name is Jeremy Schiedinger, and I had the great opportunity to sit down and discuss baseball on all fronts with Jose Rio Berger and also Troy Silva, both from Riho Athletics. We talked about their mission behind Riho Athletics and what they're trying to do for the game of baseball. Obviously, you might know these two guys from their social media presence on Twitter, on Facebook. They do such a great job of promoting the game of baseball and working to create positive changes within our culture. Jose has written a book called Creating Winning Relationships Through Sports. Troy has also written a book called The 9 Innings of Hitting. And these guys are doing their best to educate coaches and create a better platform to coach from. And we were more than excited to get them down on our podcast and talking baseball with us. We're talking youth baseball. We're talking the showcase realm. We're also talking coaching culture and how to be better for our kids. Listen up. This is a great episode. Again, we appreciate it. And thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball. Okay, guys, I'm really excited about this call. I've got Jose Rio Berger on. I got Troy Silva on. Guys, thank you for being on Calls from the Clubhouse with us. How are things out in Bellevue, Washington?
We're doing great. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I think the beauty of where this podcast is coming from and having you two guys on, we're going to spend some time talking about youth baseball. We're going to talk through some hitting, but I'm really interested in having our listeners find out more about what's going on at Riho Athletics, because if you spend some time researching it, getting on their site, obviously the Twitter presence, which we'll come back to, you guys are located in the northeast part of Seattle, but you've got 8 acres of this facility, turf field, indoor facility. Our listeners are probably more interested in the mission behind what you're doing with Riho Athletics. So Jose, jump on that. And obviously, Troy, we want to hear from you as well. But Jose, talk to us about Riho Athletics.
I was fortunate to play pro ball in the 90s with the Mets. And when I was done playing, I felt like just a need and a calling to be able to reach kids and mentor them on and off the field. And so kind of my vision and my passion when I was done playing is to put kids in a position where they have to be disciplined, structured, but they're challenged with love. And so the whole philosophy was to get kids better on the field and challenge them off the field, from checking their grades to making sure that they're respecting mom and dad, getting them outside of their comfort zone and making friends at school and having coaches like us that they can look up to that know that if they make an error, they're not going to get yelled at. We're not going to treat them different if they go 0-for-4, if they go 4-for-4, because we care about their character and their hustle and how they work. And through that, you know, it's almost 17 years now that we're training over 10,000 kids a year and over 100 teams. And, you know, we've been blessed with a beautiful facility where we can live on the property, have a field, you know, have an indoor space with the weight training room. And we'll train kids if they're just learning how to play baseball. Or, you know, yesterday I was working with a couple of Division I kids that were home from summer, and even guys pro ball in the off season. So it's not just geared towards the best of the best. We're willing to work with any kid and family that wants a desire to get better and to be challenged both on and off the field, and that's what our passion's all about.
Well, I basically kind of moved up here from California after pro ball. My wife and I just decided to move up here and kind of check it out, and Jose definitely had a vision of what he wanted to accomplish, and I played college ball with him, and the funny part is he was a bigger idiot than I was. So, you know, him calling me and saying, we're doing this baseball thing, I wanted to kind of check it out, see where we could take it. And, you know, it's been just an awesome journey. And it's grown beyond what we would even imagine, I guess, when we first started it. And, you know, we're basically just a bunch of idiots that God's using in kind of a big way. And it's pretty cool to see. And we're just basically trying to relay the information that we've been given and basically just help out parents and youth and anybody that's interested. It's been awesome. And I love my job, if you can call it a job, and I love going to work every day, getting to do what we get to do.
That is a true blessing to be able to say that. That's really cool what you guys are into. And you kind of alluded to it, and I'm interested because I started my coaching career on the NAIA level, and I just got back from Lewis in Idaho, and Troy and I were texting while I was watching some games. But
you guys were teammates at LC State and obviously won the 1996 NAIA championship. Can you guys, whoever wants to take it, we'll start with Troy, if you want to talk about your experience there at Lewis and Clark and obviously being a national champion, how that's impacted you moving forward.
Well, honestly, that's where I kind of learned how to play the game correctly. For people that are listening that don't know, Ed Sheff was the coach there, and he was, I mean, every story you've heard about him is true and then some. But on the flip side of that, you know, when you're in the mix of, you know, the everyday, I guess, getting yelled at thing that goes along with it, you're just learning valuable life lessons. So a lot of the stuff that we teach today is basically from him. He was an amazing coach, in my opinion, the best coach maybe ever to play or to coach. And it's just the structure that he had and the things that we learned from him, we actually try to take into what we do here on a regular basis, just in a different way. So, you know, we did win a national championship in 1996. We played on just an amazing team. The environment was great. You just build this camaraderie that you normally wouldn't have just because of all the stuff that you have to go through. And that's where I met Jose. And like I said, we were idiots just doing stupid stuff. But God has kind of changed us into being godly men and trying to be an example. And to see him doing the same thing and to be able to hold each other accountable is a pretty special thing.
Absolutely. Jose, what would you add to that experience there at Lewis Clark State?
Well, first thing I'll say is Troy got the MVP for the World Series, but I had a better batting average, so I don't know why he got it and I didn't. But I'll put that on the record out there. Right? Oh, yeah, yeah.
They don't count drag bunt hits, so he had probably about 4 or 5 drag bunt hits.
Funny guy, yeah. Anyway, you know, what I would take from that is it's what Ed Sheff taught us in terms of the discipline, the structure, has made me a better husband, made me a better, you know, father. I have 5 kids, and it's made me a better business owner. It's helped me develop a mentality to go through life looking at the glass half full and finding a way to get it done. And I think the influence of a coach, if coaches really understood their influence and how they went about their practices, how they went about caring about the kids, because, yeah, he swore back in the day, and he hit us, and he did different things, but we always knew deep down that he actually cared about us. And he cared about what we wanted to do. And so one of our missions here is for every kid that walks in our facility, every family that walks in our facility, that we take our experience from LC State and put kids and families in a position to feel better about who they are than before they walked in our place when they leave our place. And that's our ultimate goal. And that's what I've taken, what we've taken from LC back in the day.
Now, here's the beauty. And with our calls from the Clubhouse podcast, we only really look for guys that are loyal ABC members. You two are obviously that. But you're also exhibitors as well. Can you kind of a little bit off the beaten path, but talk about your experience at ABCA, the convention? I mean, for us to get to younger coaches or new coaches and talk about being in a venue with over 5,000 guys that think the same way you do. They're passionate about baseball. But what's been your all's experience with the convention and membership and obviously looking forward to Anaheim in 17?
I think any coaching clinic, any event that you can go to, you're around like-minded people that want to learn more about the game. I think it advances you as a coach, and I think it advances you as a human being, as a man. You know, I mean, from the psychological aspects of coaching to strategy to learning more about hitting, whatever it may be, the environment that is there is positive. For us being a vendor, talking about ArejoBaseball.tv, we've got a ton of registered users, subscribers through that we've built relationships with. The baseball world is so big, yet it's so small. And so being a member of ABCA has helped us, helped our business. And in addition to that, we've built relationships with other coaches around the country. And matter of fact, some of our kids in our program have now been placed in colleges from colleges that we've met at the ABCA conference to be able to just do that.
Wow.
So it's been a great connection for us, not just, you know, within the Northwest, but really all around the world.
Troy, what about you, man?
Yeah, I would say that the besides just the speakers that are there giving the information, which is top-notch information, I really think it's about the relationships built. Obviously, it's a huge, huge event. I mean, you got everything there that you can even imagine, and then some. It's a little bit overwhelming when it comes to just the stuff that's there. But you definitely are developing, you know, relationships with people, building bonds, learning new things from other people, you know, taking stuff from, you know, little nuggets here and there, and then also being able to pass on knowledge. I like about the clinic the most is being able to pass on knowledge to people and to talk to people that are there wandering and just willing to learn.
Jose, you kind of made reference to this, and I'm going to make sure we have a chance to kind of maybe lead off with this, and it's going to bring us right back to where we're going with our questions. But if you've spent time, if you're listening, if you've spent some time, you need to check out RehoBaseball.tv. Also, these guys have come up with the Reho app. It's got obviously quality information on there for you. But I think where most guys have gotten to know you all has been through your Twitter presence on social media. You guys, your vignettes, your videos, your information, your simple tweets, hashtag Tuesday Truth. The things you guys are putting out is just beyond quality that, you know, as coaches, we need to be diving into and understanding and really applying to our players and to our teams. But, Jose, I'm obviously going to tee this up for you, man. Talk to us about RehoBaseball.tv and the app and the Twitter presence and how impactful that's been, not only for Reho Athletics, but also the players and coaches you guys are dealing with.
You know, touching on the TV aspect of it, we just felt like we have a passion to impact families, and we can only touch so many lives here in the Northwest. I mean, we have a fly-in program. People fly in to come train with us and do some stuff, but the majority of our clientele, you know, 80% of it is locally here in the Seattle area. But with the Reho TV, we felt like we had information that people needed to hear to give them necessarily not what they wanted to hear, but what they needed to hear, whether it be from a parent perspective, what's best to do for their kid, whether it be a player trying to make it to the next level, whether it be a mom just saying, I don't know what to do with my kid, you know. And so we've developed these hitting and pitching and fielding systems and just the information that can really educate people for a very low price. I mean, we've had it live for just over 2.5 months, and we have over 1,000 registered users just in that short time with really no promotion or anything, just trying to give people quality information at an affordable price, because for a year subscription, it's like basically a hitting lesson in most places in America, and you get all this information of drills and videos and stuff that can really help. And so we just felt like we can impact worldwide being able to do stuff with the Reho TV. And, you know, speaking on the Twitter aspect of that's all Troy, so I'll pass the buck to him of what he likes to do there, what he does. He does such a phenomenal job in that.
Go ahead, Troy.
Well,
knock it out.
As far as the Twitter stuff, I just think people with this generation and kind of the age we live in, they're hungry for the truth. And I think what I've learned over the years and part of the reason why I wrote the book, Nine Innings of Hitting, is because there's just so much bad information out there that's just not truthful and it doesn't really help. So when I post stuff, every time I post something, I just want to tell people the truth and just lay it out there. And just basically just come from a common sense approach. I think common sense is missing out there with a lot of, you know, coaching and instruction. So I think that's why people like it, is because they can relate to it and they agree with it. And you might not agree with everything that I post, but it's from my heart. And it's stuff that I've seen on a day-to-day basis that really, really helps versus just what's kind of out there that doesn't help. So, you know, I try not to get too, you know, caught up into arguing with anything. I tell people I don't argue on Twitter. If you disagree, God bless, do it your way. That's great. But if you want the information that I have to give, I think it's going to help. And I think people really, 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 you know, appreciate the truth that's presented.
So really special podcast here for us, guys. We've got two authors, which is a first for Calls from the Clubhouse. And what we're excited to is really dive into some of this stuff that Troy, you just referenced, the nine innings of hitting, which basically talks about the brutal reality of hitting. And talk to us about that book. It's obviously a number one bestseller on Amazon. You're having great success with it, but talk to us about the impact of that book and obviously where it's taking you from there.
Well, basically the book idea came about by just kind of being frustrated with what was being taught and frustrated on the level of kids just weren't getting what they truly needed in most instances. So there's, As you know as well as I do, I mean, everybody thinks they're a professional hitting coach these days, and there's a lot of good hitting coaches out there, but there's just a lot of stuff that I've heard over the years that I've seen kids try to do, and it just wasn't helping. So, like I mentioned before, I'm not very smart, but I am, you know, obviously gifted with the hitting side of things. I don't know why, but I just had this idea to write a book, and the book itself was easy to write because it was our everyday, you know, hour per hour, day-to-day grind that we do every day, all day. And I've seen kids from, you know, 5 years old all the way up to pro-level kids, and you just come to the conclusion that not everybody needs the same stuff. So the purpose behind the book was to just present the truth, most importantly, but also just debunk and just let people know about the common myths and misconceptions that are out there and just really try to give people what they really need versus just the common stuff. So the idea behind the book is basically giving hitters what they need individually, not using a blanket approach to hitting and just making everybody do it this way just because it worked for you or some guy taught you that way, but to really dive into what individuals really need and how to give that information. I think there's a lot of stuff out there today with, you know, people can see swing flaws and, you know, you have these Zep things that are out there showing, you know, swings and bat speed and launch angles and all this stuff, but the why it happens isn't really taught. So most people can see what's going on with the swing, but the why and what hitters really need is the most important thing. So I just basically started doing it one day. It came about, it flowed through kind of what we do on a day-to-day basis, and it became an Amazon bestseller, which I have no idea how that happened, but it's pretty good information, and it's something that I think people like it because they relate to it. I get more and more coaches every day saying, I knew that, you know, that's what I teach. And that was kind of the whole goal, is just to not reinvent the wheel, but just give that information that coaches can really grasp onto that can actually help improve on-field performance.
And we're going to dive right back into that here in a little bit about your myths of hitting and spend some time here towards the end of this interview talking about hitting. But, Jose, I'm going to also tee this up for you because it's going to lead us right into this youth baseball discussion. But your book, which I've got to get my hands on, I'm completely intrigued by what you're putting out there, but Creating Winning Relationships Through Sports. And, you know, we were talking before we got rolling here just about your mission to really impact the heart of a coach and obviously his mission behind being in front of young men. Talk to us about that book, where it came from, and obviously the success you've had putting that out there.
Well, my story is really unique in such a way that, you know, my dad died when I was really young, and I didn't have any dad to look up to or any role models outside of the coaches that I played for. And growing up and playing, you know, four sports, basketball, you know, football, baseball, soccer, which I still think kids should do, a little plug, don't play one sport, play multiple sports that actually make you a better baseball player. That's a whole other topic, but, you know, I didn't have anybody to look up to. And so when I started Rehill Athletics, I saw tens of thousands of families over the years, relationships crumbling because of the pressure from mom and dad, from the expectations, and not the crazy parents. We all know the crazy dad who thinks his kid's going to be in the big leagues and be the next Bryce Harper. We all seen that guy. But I saw good, well-meaning families just getting frustrated at one another and unrealistic expectations for their 10-year-old to hit a home run in Little League every time. And so what I did is basically try to tell my experience of what coaches and roles they had in my lives, and then how I could help parents from what I've seen. So when the kid's done playing baseball, they actually like you. When they're off to college, they want to call to see how mom and dad is doing, not just because they want money, you know, and just to really put things in perspective for people. Chapter 8 is about my daughter. My wife and I adopted a special needs baby who was born with drugs in her system, cleft lip and palate, and we had to feed her through her tube for the first couple of years. And so she's still developmentally behind. She's a beautiful little girl. She's now 9 years old. We got her when she was a few weeks old. Well, we're just hoping that she can develop into being whatever God wants her to be, but she struggles with speech. She struggles with learning and all these different things. And so when I see a dad stressed out beyond no understanding because his kid struck out, well, come in my house for a day and see what we have to deal with sometimes and put it in perspective. You know, we had a kid that we played against a month ago, and he just died in an ATV accident, and his mom found him in the backyard with his neck broken. I'm not trying to get too deep here, but it's like, are we really worried about our kid striking out at 13 in baseball when no one's going to remember what happened last week? When you have kids, you know, doing different things and the struggles that my daughter has, and we wouldn't change her for the world. She's taught us a lot. But I think parents need to have a real understanding of reality of kids in sports. There's nothing wrong that we can't be passionate about it and love it and be a huge part of our lives, but we have to keep things in perspective. And so at the end of the day, I wrote the book, and it's a very short book, a lot of pictures, because I'm not that smart of a guy.
Amen to that.
But at the end of the day, it was about helping families build relationships that are stronger because of the sports that we play versus just tearing it apart, not even know what we're doing. So that's my passion, that's my hope, and that's the direction of the whole book. And so that's kind of the purpose of it.
Well, you just brought up the great line was keep it in reality. And I think that perspective in itself is going to lead us into this next charge of youth baseball. And I'm interested, and Jose, I'll kind of keep you on this, in terms of – your all's teaching at Rio Athletics, it just seems to be a lot about character-based ideas, about being a great teammate, what it means to be part of a great team. And I know, you know, Troy, you've got a hand in this as well, so I'll come to you in a second. But the leadership principles that are behind what you're giving these players, but like you said, it doesn't stop there. You're really getting to the parents and making sure they have probably the most positive mindset walking into this, you know, travel ball movement, but more importantly, this youth baseball movement and what's really important at that time. So jump all over that in terms of the mission, but even more greater detail in terms of what you guys are giving those players and parents.
We have a philosophy within our teams that what we can accomplish together, we can never do alone. And getting people to grasp that and understand, what does that mean? Being a good teammate, being a good friend when you're not feeling good. When you make a mistake, you pick up your teammate next to you. You know, when the kids at 16 years old want to go to a party, you have an accountability bracelet within each other that says, we're not going to go to that party, right? You're going to go out of your way and make a new friend at school that someone you don't know of, because you never know what that kid's going through, and you just want to make a new friend. You want him to know that he's sitting by himself at lunch every day, that you're a varsity baseball player, but you're going to go out of your way and see how he's doing. And challenging families, moms, dads, challenging dads not to be on the right field line, stressed out, and putting a radar gun behind the fence when they're 11 years old to make sure he reaches a certain amount that no one's going to remember tomorrow. I mean, at the end of the day, the driving force is to get kids and parents and everybody to understand that you can't go through life alone. You're never going to win a baseball game alone. You're never going to win anything you do in life alone. So you need people around you. They're going to hold you accountable. They're going to challenge you both physically and mentally and hopefully spiritually. And if you do those things, what you can do as a baseball player will take your game to such a higher level, because it's not about you. It's not about your ranking. It's not about what class you are. It's not about, you know, you. It's about the people around you. And what we found out is if we coaches hold the kids accountable to that standard, the kids today thrive on that. They thrive on doing that, because I tell kids all the time, there's a million kids that are going to go to a party on Friday night. If you want to be a rebellion today, you want to be someone that goes against the grain, actually do your homework first. After the football game, go enjoy it, then come home, go to bed at a good time so you can actually play in your football game on Saturday and have a good day so you're not so tired. I said, because there's a million kids that can go to a party. So if you're not that special, go ahead if you want to be like everybody else. And we found out is if you really take the time to challenge them and to get accountability around them, kids just thrive, and guess what? They become a better baseball player. So it's a product of challenging them physically and mentally.
Troy, you got anything to add to that?
Well, honestly, I just think one of the biggest things that's missing in especially like the travel ball or the select ball that's out there is just joy and happiness and just enjoying the opportunity that you have to be out there playing. I think too many times, you know, the focus is playing at this level and then so focused on batting average and just selfishness, it's the joy gets taken out of the game. And like Jose mentioned earlier, no one's really guaranteed to play tomorrow. You know, you could be injured and be done with your career. Heaven forbid something happens and you're just done playing. But I think we just need to get back to just enjoying the game, not focusing so much about the results, but about the development and just having fun. I see coaches out there that is wound so tight. You know, a guy strikes out and it's the end of the world, and then the kid's crying and the parents are pacing. It's just craziness. So we need to smile more as coaches. Parents need to just enjoy their kids being out there playing. And as far as us at Rio Athletics, I think that's our mission, is to be an example in that baseball world. Because you know as well as I do, the baseball world gets pretty dark with the arrogance and the cockiness and the cussing. It's just not very encouraging, and it's not very happy. So I'm not saying you can't be a competitor, but I am saying you need to enjoy the time you get to play versus just, you know, having that entitlement of I need this and I need that and I'm going to play at this level. So happiness, joy, coaches, parents, smile more. That's my advice.
Great stuff. And I think, Jose, I'll come back to you because I obviously saw your vignette video on this. And it's definitely a youth epidemic. It's a baseball epidemic, these youth injuries that are, you know, crippling our kids, and they're experiencing elbow issues, shoulder issues at 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And we all, and like you referenced in the video, there's research that backs this up. We all know what the truths are, but some guys, some coaches are so focused on winning, they're getting it completely out of perspective and actually damaging these players. You want to talk about what you've done, especially with the Rio teams in terms of winning, but you're obviously not utilizing the curveball and you're making sure the safety of your players is at the forefront?
Yeah, you know, we have, with our younger team, I've been coaching them. They're 13 now. I started them when they were 9, and we kept kind of the core group together, and we didn't throw one curveball until they were 13 years old. And And, you know, we went to Cooperstown and almost won the whole thing at Cooperstown and lost in the championship game. Every team there, you know, 104 teams the week that we were there were throwing curveballs. We were the only team that wasn't. And throughout that, what I found is, one, just touching on the baseball side of things, if you're 9, 10, 11, and you have to rely on a curveball to get kids out, you're never developing command of your fastball and your changeup. You're not able to locate, and you're not building arm strength either, because the reality is not a lot of 9, 10, 11-year-olds can hit curveballs. So you rely on that, and all of a sudden, 14, 15, everybody can hit a curveball. You got three average pitches rather than having a couple dominant that you can locate, right? And one of our kids in our program is a perfect example. He throws 80% fastballs. He's going to Oregon State on a nice ride, one of the best schools in the country, and he just dominates and locates fastballs early because we didn't let him throw a bunch of curveballs when he was young. And so I think people can say, well, I have some guy in the office studying elbow issues with 100 kids. We see this every single day. A kid at 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, his arm should not be sore. You know, and a lot of times a kid's arm gets sore if he throws too many curveballs. So I don't care what any scientific study says. I've seen it with my own eyes with thousands of kids and all the tournaments we come across. Is the simple fact, if you're throwing 30 curveballs a game and you're a coach at the youth level, you do not care about the kids. And I'm just going to flat out tell the truth. You don't care. You care about the win, and that's what you want. Because if you really cared about those kids, you wouldn't overpitch them. They wouldn't be throwing over 100 pitches. They wouldn't be throwing curveballs. And guess what? Nobody is going to remember that tournament 2 weeks from now. Nobody's going to remember it. You might have your trophy on your wall, but at the end of the day, it's about a trophy. It's about these kids in the development, like Troy touched on earlier. It's having fun. It's giving a chance to play multiple positions and teaching them something that they can learn to deal with adversity when they do lose and to be humble when they win, when they do it the right way.
Troy, I'm going to really interested, because we were talking about this before we got going. The youth epidemic, what are some ideas that you guys have at Reho, or some ideas that you guys have personally in terms of how we can attack this the youth baseball problem? And we just alluded to a lot of the issues, but what are some other ideas that you guys have that you think can really kind of get us back in the right direction? And you referenced some earlier, but what else would you offer to that?
Well, I think it comes down to the coaches, number one. We're really big on we do obviously a lot of coaches' clinics. We do a lot of speaking and talking on coaches and being a mentor. But I really think it comes down to coaches being an influence in the right way. So I tell coaches all the time, you are going to be an example no matter whether you like it or not. But it's what kind of an example you're going to be. Are you going to be a good one or a bad one? Because you're going to influence kids either in a positive or a negative way every time. And I myself have been a negative influence. I can admit that. You know, I try to learn from it and move on, but you have to understand as a coach, you are a role model. You are going to be a role model, and it's your decision whether or not you choose to be a good one or a bad one. So that doesn't mean you have to do everything perfect. It doesn't mean you have to be a perfect person, but your mindset and your attitude should be focused on the kids first and foremost versus, you know, just the number of wins you get and what you can do in the sport. And, you know, it's not all about you. It's about these kids. So I think that's, Once a coach gets that mindset of, hey, I'm going to try to be a role model first and really be an influence in these kids' lives in a positive way, I think that's where you can kind of take the game to a whole different level.
Right. Jose, what would you add to that?
I would just say you actually have to have, like, goals as a coach. You have to go into a practice and saying, how am I personally going to have fun? Like, if I have fun, the kids are going to have fun. How am I going to be consistent with my discipline? When I say run through the line, that means run through the line every time, not just three out of the four times. Right. If I'm consistent as a coach, if I have fun as a coach, if I'm making sure that I'm structured and organized, right, they can see I'm not just trying to figure out stuff as I'm standing around to run a practice. Do I have a plan set in place? What do I do if it rains? What do I do if my number one arm goes down and I got the other guys to step up? What do I need to do as a coach to be able to create an environment in such a way that kids feel confident who they are? Our Reho teams, our older teams, they won a couple national titles, and we had kids, you know, 10 kids going to Division I programs. And we tried to make the game where it was fun and it was about the team. And so as a coach, we had to have goals. What do we want to get accomplished in practice? What do we need to give kids another opportunity to have success? At the youth level, when you're talking about 12 and under, I always tell coaches, don't start your best guy hitting the three hole every game. Sometimes start that guy as a sub and say, you know what, be a good leader today. And that kid who struggles is 12th on your roster, put him in the three hole one day. You know what you're doing for that kid's confidence? You know, doing for that kid's mom and dad. I had two, the perfect example, I had two kids on my Little League team a few years ago. They were two little twins. They were both about 3 feet tall, and they were 9 years old, and they just struggled. I told him one day, you guys are pitching this day. And I knew we were going to get five runs every inning in Little League. They stopped it at five runs. After that game, that mom hugged me and cried for a good 15 minutes saying, what you just did for my kids, no other coach has ever done. And it's all I had to do was put my, because I'm a competitor. I like to win, right? I had to put my pride aside. I had to put what I wanted to get accomplished and make it about those kids. And as a coach, if you're willing to do that and make it about those kids, you're going to be less likely to throw a lot of curveballs. You're going to be more likely to give kids an opportunity to play in a certain position that maybe doesn't give your team the best chance to win in that pool play game, but you're building that kid's confidence. And continuing to do that as a coach challenges you. And one of the most important things is having accountability. If you as a coach don't have accountability with another coach, you're going to just do your own thing, right? I mean, we have umpire after umpire come up to us and say, I can't wait to umpire your game. I've heard so much good things about you. How many umpires go to a game plate meeting and say that, right? Because they know when an umpire makes a mistake, I'll call time. I'll ask him. I won't embarrass him. I won't swear at him. I won't yell at him. I'll ask if he could get looked at. He says, no, I'm good. Okay, I'll walk away. Because not that one play is not going to make a difference in the game if I outcoach the other team, right? And so I think having the right mentality going into every situation can change the whole culture and what we're doing in youth baseball if we get the heart of the coach to understand the bigger picture.
That's all great information, guys. I appreciate you really elaborating and sharing that stuff. As we kind of move from youth baseball, now we're moving into obviously the middle school, high school arena, and we're getting into these exposure showcase events. I know this is a topic for you guys that you're passionate about, because you've had great success moving guys out of your programs into collegiate baseball and even professional baseball. But Jose, you want to jump on obviously where you see the dynamic of the showcase exposure events and obviously how they're pushing guys into college and professional baseball?
Well, you know, I think it's a balance. I think the culture today has taught kids and families More showcase, more exposure. You got to go here, you got to go there, you got to go there. And what happens is the kid has forgot to actually get better. So they're more worried about where their rankings, what event they need to go to, and they forget about doing their long toss and their workouts and their hitting lessons and all the stuff they need to do. There is certain events and showcases that you may need to attend. But what's happened today is there's one every weekend, every state, all around the country. And families are literally mortgaging their houses and going broke because they're told they need to go here, they need to go there. And if you're good enough, the same thing still happens. They'll come to you. They really will. They really will come to you. Now, does that go for every kid? There's the Division III, the Division II type kids that have good grades, good SATs. Yes, they need to attend certain events. But it's created this selfish me, how do I get ranked, where do I go mentality. And that's what I think has kind of hurt the game in some ways. And it's nothing against any of these great organizations that do this stuff. It's just a culture that we've created, and it's not their fault. It's not the kid's fault. It's not the parents' fault. It's just kind of where society is. And so what we try to do is try to educate parents and kids to do what's best for them and their family. If a kid's a 3.0 GPA and he got a 1,200 SAT, he doesn't need to go to the Stanford camp because he's not going to Stanford. So why do that, right? It's understanding where your talent level is. Does he want to go play in the Pac-12, but he hasn't even made his varsity high school team until he's a senior? He doesn't need to go to that Pac-12 count. So it's more about educating the parents and the kids to understand where and when they do need to go, if they need to go. The majority of kids in our program, they never attend a showcase, and we still get them placed in college because we try to educate them of where to go and how to go about it.
Troy, what would you add to that, the whole culture around the exposure showcase events? What would you add to Jose's answer?
I would just add that that's kind of what it's created. It's created this selfish me attitude. It's not about team. It's about, you know, your own personal stats. It's about what you can do to be seen. It's created the word entitlement. I've seen a lot, too. Kids these days are entitled. You know, I do this showcase, I do that. You know, they go to college, and I've talked to several college coaches. They just feel entitled to be, you know, playing shortstop and hitting in the three hole because that's what they've done their whole lives, and then they get there and it's not what they expected, so they just transfer out and they go somewhere else. So the word entitlement is kind of, I'm entitled to do this because I'm ranked here, I'm ranked there, where the reality of it is you still got to continue to work hard. Just because you go to college, it doesn't mean you're going to be starting and doesn't mean you're going to be the main guy there. So I think the selfishness that I've seen is widespread. It's created this, I guess, negativity towards the team. And as, at least up here in the Washington area, you see kids just go from team to team to team to team because it's just not the way that they want it to be done. So, you know, that's the biggest thing is the selfishness and the entitlement that's created.
Well, while we got you, Troy, because talk about the nine innings of hitting and you attacking these myths that are around hitting. I know it's tough to go through one by one, but kind of the main ones that jump off the page to you that you can kind of educate our listeners on, what are those main myths that those coaches need to be aware of, and obviously how can they address them?
Well, there's literally 30, 40, 50 myths that I talk about on a regular basis. The top three, I would say, the first one would be this whole chopping down to the ball. I don't know who came up with it. I guess I understand why people say it is the quickest way between 2 points is a straight line. But unfortunately, when you hit the straight line, it's not downhill through the ball. So this whole chopping down through the ball, nobody hits like that. Not one person in the big leagues hits like that. So I don't know why we teach it to kids. So that's the first one. The second one is letting the ball travel deep in the zone. I know Zepp did a study here, I think it was 2014, about contact points in the strike zone. And if you want to consistently be a good hitter, the contact point needs to be out by the hitter's front side of their body, their front foot, not deep in the zone. But that's basically created because of too much T-work, too much soft toss, too much easy BP, where, yeah, you need to let the ball travel deep when you're doing that kind of stuff, but when you actually get challenged in a real-life game situation, the contact point needs to be consistently out in front. Now, what you're thinking and what really happens could be two different things. You might think let the ball travel and hit it deep in the zone, but the reality is you need to hit the ball on the front side of your body on a consistent basis. And then the last one and the final one that I hear every tournament that I go to, every day of my life almost, is get your front foot down early. I mean, you go to any game anywhere and you hear every coach, get your front foot down, get your front foot down, get your front foot down. And all these kids think about is getting their front foot down when that's not what they need. In fact, getting your front foot down too early limits the timing and the basically momentum shift into the bat speed, the power. So the front foot never has to get down early. It can if you like it that way and you can do it, but the front foot has to get down quickly and on time. So I can kind of talk about all these all day long, but those are the top three that I see.
You spend a lot of time really crushing mentality. I know you and Jose both do that, but you know, while you're on it, Troy, talk about mentality at the plate in terms of what are you really giving those guys? What are you trying to arm them with between the ears as they approach each and every at bat?
Well, each player is different, so each player needs something different mentality-wise. I mean, you can go into just confidence, aggressiveness, you know, approach. There's tons of different aspects of mentality. What I know is this. Usually when you fix the player's mentality and you fix their timing and maybe their contact point, you'll usually fix their swing. So I think what happens in this day and age with hitting is most people start to focus with the mechanics and the swing and how the swing's supposed to operate, you know, and you're supposed to have this whole swing approach that's supposed to look this way. And the funny thing is if you really fix the mentality, plan, approach, and your individual weaknesses, the swing will naturally work the way it's supposed to work. So I think it's kind of backwards these days. I think most people think the swing focus is the most important thing, and if you get out in a game, it's because you have a bad swing. Or the reality of it is most of the time you get out in the game, it comes from bad pitch recognition, bad vision, bad approach, you know, whatever it is, bat speed. There's tons of different things that actually create on-field problems. So as far as mentality stuff, it's huge. I think that's where most coaches fail because they never really get into the mentality. They get into the swing mechanics to a certain level, and then they don't know where to go. And I tell people all the time, you can't really learn how to hit until you have a foundational swing. But the hitting basically starts when the mentality starts, not when the swing starts. So, yeah, the mentality's huge. I can go tons of different ways with it, but it's just got to be a focus.
What about you, Jose? What would you add to that?
Prime example, yesterday I was doing a hitting lesson with one of our kids, and I won't name the school. He's playing that he's a starting shortstop as a freshman at a major Division I school, and he said his coach was happy when he hit ground balls to shortstop. He's a left-handed hitter. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? He goes, he just really wanted me to focus on away. And I'm like, well, how'd you do? He goes, well, I started off the year pretty good, and then we just focused on away, 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 away. And I'm like, well, what's your strength? He's like, middle in. I said, what if you got on top of the plate? You just yanked everything and hit line drives all over the field. Would that be okay? He's like, yeah, I would think it would be okay, but he wanted me to hit the ball away. And so I said, well, how are you doing in summer ball this year? And he goes, I'm just up on the plate just hitting everything hard. I said, how do you feel? He goes, I've hardly got out all summer. You know, and it's like it is to the point where we're getting so much. Even this is at a major Division I school. We're so focused on making a left-handed hitter, in this instance, hit everything away. Where yesterday when I was hitting with him, there was a pitch 3 or 4 inches on the outside part of the plate. And he smashed the ball. It had to go, you know, obviously I was in a cage, but if it was live, it went 350 plus on the line. with a wood bat with a, you know, basically a kid that just finished his freshman year. What if he was right there in that situation? His coach says, don't do that. You need to hit the ball away and try to hit it towards a shortstop. It just totally creates this weak mentality. It creates this mentality of, I just got to kind of poke at the ball versus have this aggressive mentality. And every kid's different. Some kids don't need an aggressive mentality. They need to slow down a little bit. But understanding the mentality of each individual kid as a coach is one of the hardest things to do. And most coaches have a system versus, how do I motivate each individual player in a team setting? And if a coach can learn to do that, then I think you've found a way to make your team reach its fullest potential. It's not just about your way and your philosophy, but it's about having an approach as a team, but understanding how do you motivate each individual, you know, with their mentality. I think that's the key to any coach having success.
Well, and you just went in right where I was looking to go here towards the end. Jose, if you had to give coaches and pretty much the listeners of our podcast are all coaches on all levels, whether it be youth, academy, high school, or college coaches, what advice do you have for them, given the perspective that you have and the dealings that you've had with Riho Athletics and the players that have come through your all's programs and the tournaments and all your years of experience? What's the best advice you would give them moving forward in terms of growing and developing as a coach?
Less is more. So what that means is don't overteach. Kids, they got enough distractions with iPads and social media and schools and girls and all these different things that go on. You know, try to give them a few, you know, nuggets that'll help them be successful. Get them to master that and then move on from there. I think today we're overteaching, and it's just overteach this program, and it's just too much information. And so as a coach, I think why we've been successful is we get the kids to know that we care about them as people, and we actually care about what they do off the field. If you get a kid to believe and know that you care about them as a person, they'll play their heart out for you. If you treat them different, I don't care if you're at the college level. I was a collegiate coach for a summer ball program years ago, and I made sure those kids, even when they came home from college and were playing for me, that they knew that I cared about them as people. I asked about how they treated their mom and dad. Anyway, I can go on and on. The point is, they'll play their heart out for you, and they'll do whatever you say if they know you care about them as a person. And then when you teach the baseball side of them, let them be who they are. Let them be an athletic kid, how they want to set up, how they want to do things. Let them, and build off of that. Don't make them go to this certain mold. If you watch any big league game, there's not one hitter that goes to the same of those 9, 18 guys in that game on the two different teams. Not one has the same setup. Not one has the same load. They're all doing their own thing, and they got to the big league by doing what they want to do. And so I think we have to, as coaches, do a little bit less, you know, listen more, and then give them stuff to work on a little bit at a time. And understand, any coach, it's not a one-month season. We have these kids for 6 to 10 months, sometimes year-round. And so look at it more as a marathon, not a sprint of what you're trying to teach.
Hopefully there's some meat on the bone there for you, Troy. But same question, man. What exactly would you give the guys that are listening in if you had that kind of that final thought in terms of how to develop and grow as a coach? What would you offer?
Well, I would just add on just that it's about the individual. It's not about you. It's not about your system. And if you truly want better team results, you have to fix each individual. So, and sometimes that means don't fix anything at all. That means let them be who they are. I mean, I remember playing with Ed Sheff at LC State, and I don't remember him really teaching me anything about my swing. He just said, hey, do it your way, and you're just going to develop a tougher mentality, and I got better as a hitter. So sometimes it's just letting them be who they are. And from what I've seen, especially at the college level, I don't know why, but at the college level, I see so many over-analytical hitters these days. It's unbelievable. Like Jose's instance from a kid that came back not too long ago. I see it every time. It's like kids come back from college and they're thinking way too much, and they're thinking about their swing, and the coach wants them to do this, and the kids just can't go there and just compete. So I think they're being severely limited with their mentality and their mental approach because they're so focused on trying to make the coach happy versus doing what works for them. And I see that all the time where kids just start struggling because there's so much pressure trying to do it a specific way that they can't do. So the overanalyzation is kind of, you know, penetrated into especially the college level and the high school level, that it's more detrimental than helpful, that's for sure. So we got to be smart. We got to teach things. But I would kind of reiterate what Jose said, less is more, and don't overanalyze everything.
Well, fellas, this information has been absolutely imperative for our listeners to hear, but excited that we have an opportunity to sit down and talk. and get this stuff out to hopefully help our coaches learn and grow and make our players better. But I'm excited about what this could do for the game of baseball, and we're really thankful for both you guys being on. Jose, Troy, thank you for your time, and we obviously look forward to catching up with you down the road.
Thank you for the opportunity. God bless.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you guys for listening in. What a tremendous episode and an absolute pleasure to sit down and talk the game of baseball with Troy Silva and Jose Rio Berger, both from Riho Athletics out in Washington. We truly appreciate their time, their information, and their mission behind Riho Athletics and what they want to do for the game of baseball to help positively change where our game's going. Thank you guys for being part of that. Again, we appreciate you listening to this episode, and if you're interested in past episodes, we've had some great guests on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. You can go over to our website, abca.org. You can click under the Resources tab. Right there, you'll find Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. You'll see all the episodes that we've put out to date. You can also head over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast channel. It'll show up on your phone automatically. If you're interested in social media, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, at ABCA1945. You can find us on there. And obviously, we're always reached through email. You can shoot me an email directly at Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We'd love to hear from you and hear your thoughts, your topics that you're interested in hearing about on our podcast. And we're excited to continue to build this brand and bring this information to you. Thanks again for listening in. We appreciate your support, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.